Another opening, another show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Brought to you on Kaurna Land in Gawler, South Australia.
Hi Jane, how are you?
I'm well, thank you Michael. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I busk here in Gawler, as the listeners know.
Yes.
And I had a lady come up to me from the southern suburbs of Adelaide after I told her about the Priscilla the Musical podcast.
Oh, yes.
And I was telling her about the restoration project with Priscilla, the actual bus.
Oh, from the South Australian History Trust is doing.
Yes, the History Trust of South Australia in conjunction with the University of Queensland.
Uh-huh.
So she said to me, I would love to give you some money towards the restoration project.
Right.
And so remember, I worked out, did the maths. Mm-hmm. Australia has a population of 24.7 million people.
Yes.
If we all donated 10 cents, we would raise $2,740,000, completely enough money for the project. This lady gave me $7. So she paid for 70 people towards the restoration project.
Awesome. Well, thank you, random southern suburbs lady.
Don't forget, listeners, you can still donate towards the restoration project. Go to priscilla.history.sa.gov.au.
Now, listeners, if you are new, you might not know that due to our copyright situation, we do not have a license to play extracts from the musical that we are talking about in the episode. I curate a list on Spotify of songs from the particular show, and I try and find every bit of the score, even if it's the Edelweiss reprise. Obviously not in this show. I encourage you to go and have a look at that. It's always on the same page as the episode.
Getting lots of great feedback still from everyone in the community about the musical theatre playlist.
Oh, great.
It's really, really good.
And this time we're going to have some treats because there have been some really interesting renditions of songs from the musical Chicago.
Listeners, have you subscribed to another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast?
Which you can do on YouTube, or you follow, that's the terminology, on Spotify, and on Castbox you subscribe.
That's right. And we're also on the socials as well.
And we are on Instagram, but it is still, because of Instagram rules, it is just Jane Feast. But everything on there is about another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast.
And we'd love to hear from you. Emails, any theatre questions that you have, or if you're a subscriber, tell us who you are so you can get a mention on our podcast.
Now, our email address has changed. The original host is having technical difficulties and has suspended all the accounts that we have with them. So get your pencil out and a piece of paper or your phone.
I've got my pen. I've got my pencil. What's the email address, Jane?
aoas2025@hotmail.com. aoas2025@hotmail.com. So another opening, another show, AOAS 2025, which is when we started, at hotmail.com.
Get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you.
You can have an opinion about our show. You can have an opinion about our show. And we would love a funny story. Our guest today shared some funny stories about mishaps on stage. If you don't like us, you can just scroll on by.
Copyright.
No, because that's not the words Hal David wrote. We appreciate the love. We also would love for everyone to stick around for the length of the show to hear the special guest, because we've had some amazing special guests.
Yes, we've had some lovely guests and we've shared the love and we want to share that love with you.
Absolutely. So let's get cracking with today's episode, Chicago, a musical vaudeville.
Don't forget to stay tuned to the end when our special guest,
Nancy Hayes,
will take a look behind the next door and reveal the next musical to be featured on another opening, another show.
The history behind the musical Chicago. How 1920s crime and vaudeville inspired the show. The show's characters and crimes are based on real court cases from the early 20th century. I've spent many days watching lawyers in the courtroom as part of my daytime job, and it's nothing like Billy Flynn distracting the jury in Razzle Dazzle, according to my colleagues.
I'd love to see a little bit of Razzle Dazzle with lawyers nowadays.
However, when you look at Chicago, my colleagues were wrong. This is incredibly realistic. If anything, it's as dramatic as 1920s Chicago legal history. The record-breaking second longest-running show in Broadway history, Chicago tells the story of Roxy Hart and Velma Kelly, both accused of murdering their husbands, as they prepare for and eventually go to trial.
Now, don't forget, you'll get that in the synopsis later on in the podcast.
They're inspired by the hundreds of women who committed similar crimes in 1920 Chicago, and instead of becoming pariahs, they became celebrities. John Kander, Fred Ebb and Bob Fosse modelled the musical after a vaudeville revue, a popular type of performance in the 1920s, to emphasise the sensationalised nature of criminal trials back then. It's 1923 and there have been three presidents in 3 years. The 18th Amendment, being the Prohibition Law, is in effect, so you can't even drink legally as you complain about the revolving door of leaders. Everything is changing around you after the end of World War I, as industrialisation, urbanisation, immigration and evolving gender roles resulting from the ramification of the 19th Amendment, which is white women earning the right to vote, pave the way for the jazz age. Chicago is set in this landscape, which clearly influences the musical. Velma embodies changing gender roles. She's a classic flapper girl, complete with short hair and a sharp attitude, who headlines a vaudeville act with her sister and calls the shots. Plus, amid all that socio-political turmoil, it's no wonder that people wanted something to distract and entertain them. Chicago residents in the 20s did not have true crime podcasts back then, but they had newspapers and a willingness to devour juicy stories of sordid crimes.
Well, everyone loves a true crime story nowadays with podcasts and audiobooks and things like that.
I'm a lover of podcasts, but it is the last thing I want to listen to is true crime. There could be, though, that I mainly listen to podcasts to get to sleep at night. The Chicago musical was inspired by Maureen Dallas Watkins' 1926 play, which in turn was inspired by two real-life trials, those of Beulah Annan and Belva Gaetner. The women inspired Roxy and Velma, respectively. Beulah was a housewife cheating on a mechanic husband. She shot her lover, as did Roxy. And Belva was a cabaret singer. Belva killed her lover too. This was changed for the musical as Velma kills her husband and sister. But Belva, like Velma, did claim she blacked out and doesn't remember what happened. Miss Watkins, a Chicago Tribune reporter, covered the women's trials, joining other newspapers in characterising them as attractive jazz babies, corrupted by liquor and men. Though she was as sensational a reporter as anyone, she took a satirical approach to the Chicago play, making fun of the legal system as an entertainment form. This was probably because Watkins believed Beulah and Belva were guilty, even though they were acquitted. Belva and Beulah were part of a long string of women accused of murdering their spouses. The trend began in 1919 when a woman named Emma Simpson was accused of shooting and killing her husband. Between 1921 and 1930, 186 women were accused of the same crime within Cook County alone. Imagine if Cell Block Tango included all of them. The song would be a musical on its own. Chicago isn't just a legal history musical. The show embraces 1920s culture, most specifically the rise of jazz music, evolving gender roles, and especially vaudeville revues. These shows could include dancers, singers, acrobats, magicians, animals, and a host of other entertainers. Vaudeville revues were popular before the 1920s, with the dance styles peak in the mid-1910s. However, women were not widely embraced in the art until the 1920s, when newspapers throughout America began advertising for all-female vaudeville groups, similar to Velma and her sister's revue, or the Six Merry Murderesses. With a jazzy score composed by John Kander, Chicago uses 1920s culture to not only teach the audience this piece of 1920s history, but also to make fun of how court cases were dramatised. An MC introduces each musical number and some scenes in Chicago as though it were a variety show. These performances include a press conference, Roxy's trial, and even a hanging. No spoilers, won't say who. Gymnastics, puppetry, singing and dancing all come into play as these events play out like acts in the vaudeville revue. This show is a satire of celebrity culture that still exists 100 years later.
Well, look at the reality TV shows we have now and the culture that's in our culture at the moment.
Well, not even at the moment. How many millions of people were transfixed by the OJ trial?
Yes, exactly. I was transfixed, even watching documentaries of it.
Mm. But even, or maybe especially, if you're one of the true crime obsessives that Chicago pokes fun at, Chicago is one of the most entertaining nights you'll have in a theatre, with plenty of old-fashioned razzle-dazzle. Dear listener, if you haven't heard what Chicago, a musical vaudeville, is all about, this is a legitimate warning that it is all about the trial process for murderers. If that is something you are uncomfortable listening to discussions of, this is not the episode for you. Or maybe you could tune in to about 15 minutes from the end to hear our special guest talk about being in the show. So, Michael.
Jane.
Lay it on us, the synopsis of Chicago, a musical vaudeville.
This is a story about greed, corruption, murder, adultery, chaos, treachery, and all those things dear to our hearts. Do you like that?
I did.
Welcome to the Age of Jazz. Chicago the Musical is set in Chicago, obviously. It's about corruption in the hallowed halls of justice, where manipulation is the name of the game for crims to become the original gangsters, the OGs of the 1920s. Act One sees Velma Kelly greet her audience with all that jazz as chorus girl Roxy Hart murders Fred Casely, while Fred engages Roxy to break an affair they have in her bedroom.
Mm.
Fred, a furniture salesman, has a thing for the ladies.
All right.
Mm. Amos Hart, Roxy's husband, is swayed by Roxy that it was a burglar and submits to take the fall. Roxy sings Funny Honey as a token of her esteem towards her husband's zeal for her wants.
Well, he's a lovely man.
He is. A bit submissive, but, you know.
I think he just deserves a better lady.
Stand up for yourself, man. At the same time, the fuzz, or the police, talk and mention our man Fred Casely as the dead guy. Wife lies to husband, with husband reacting, "What an idiot I am." And an argument sees Roxy confess and her subsequent arrest.
Uh-huh.
Taken to Cook County Jail, Roxy meets women who have killed men. They introduce themselves with cell block tango. Roxy meets Velma, opening up a sisterhood of tales and woe, illicit acts, which I'm not going to mention in this podcast, so use your imagination.
Jolly good.
Matron Mama Morton is the boss lady of Cook County Jail, who is open to a bribe here and there. When you're good to Mama,
Mama is good to you.
Exactly. Morton engages the media to help Velma to become the media's top murderer of the week. Can you imagine that nowadays? Boom, boom, top murderer of the week.
Oh, I think there are some news organisations who are bordering on that.
This is Velma's chance for a big comeback, acting as a booking agent to be welcomed back into the fold. Roxy, too, yearns for fame, but her lawyer, Billy Flynn, does too. Amos engages Billy to be Roxy's lawyer. Adored by his female patrons to engage his services, Billy sings All I Care About. Billy agrees to assist Roxy in her case. Amos has no money to pay Billy. Enter the media to change Roxy's story into a sympathetic one, to a story of corruption by columnist Mary Sunshine, appealing to punters to buy Roxy's belongings at 2026 prices.
Good God.
I know. Roxy is then a dummy at a press conference as Billy pulls the strings to be both reached for the gun. Roxy is then the darling, instant celebrity singing Roxy to announce herself and taking over from Velma. Velma's stock plunders. Her admission to create a duo act with Roxy and to continue the sisterhood act, we hear Velma sing, "I Can't Do It Alone." Oh. No, says Roxy, as the headlines now say crime of passion. As another crime is committed, another round of I can't do it alone from Velma. Coming to the realisation that sisters are doing it for themselves, Roxy and Velma make a pact to count on one another, my own best friend. A plan is hatched in the finale of the act for Roxy to get back in the headlines. More to come. And don't forget, we have the public's favourite part of the podcast, trivia.
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 You're listening to Another Opening, Another Show, a musical theatre podcast.
Act 2 sees the return of Velma with I Know a Girl, as Velma is bitter at Roxy's twisting of the system with her womanly ways to get a doctor to say she's pregnant. A blooming Roxy sings Me and My Baby to a child that's not there. Amos, ignorant at this point, claims the unborn child as his own as Billy notices holes in his claim by Roxy. Great with child saying, you have not had relations together for 4 months. The child is not yours.
That's what I thought.
Amos files for divorce as we hear Mr. Cellophane. Velma instructs Billy what to do in the trial when Velma takes the stand after Roxy is tagged as a common criminal. Roxy fires Billy as being a celebrity goes to her head. Billy then warns her she's no celebrity and hanging by the hangman's noose is just as famous. As Roxy sees a woman accept her punishment after a lawyer is refused to take on her case as she couldn't speak English. Seeing the first woman to be executed in Chicago in years terrifies Roxy.
So it should. Yes, let the punishment fit the crime.
The punishment fit the crime.
And that is copyright free, ladies and gentlemen, so we can say as much Gilbert and Sullivan as we want.
Exactly.
Which I've also been thinking all this time of, taken to the county jail, ever since you said Cook County Jail.
Yes.
That's from the Mikado people.
Roxy crawls back to Billy, who sings Razzle Dazzle, suggesting to sell herself in a show for the trial. Amos still insists that he's the father of Roxy's child. Add to this Roxy's account of Fred Casely's murder. Roxy steals Velma's gimmick to the outrage of Mama and Velma in class. Case dismissed! Roxy is acquitted, but another crime comes along. Media reports that Roxy is no longer a celebrity. Billy and other lawyers cry, "We want our money!" Amos and Roxy try to move on with life as a married couple, but Amos leaves after having enough of being a doormat full of lies, scandals, and her womanly ways. Roxy and Velma do form a duo act, singing Nowadays, as a lament of modern life. Mary Sunshine is revealed as a man in drag, pushy promoter influencing Roxy and Velma to dance and sing Hot Honey Rag to bring Va Va Voom. Chicago ends. Roxy and Velma take their bows, exit stage right, close of curtain.
Thank you, Michael. That was a very good synopsis. And it doesn't spoil it for people to go and discover the show themselves.
Do go and see the show. It's absolutely wonderful.
Or the movie.
Or anything other on various media platforms.
And there are lots of clips of different performances that have been broadcast, like bits from variety shows on television and from the Tonys and the Oliviers and all those kind of bits. So you can actually see quite a bit of the show. And there's also, I think I might share this on socials, a clip of Ben Vereen doing Mr. Cellophane on the steps of the Brownstones on Sesame Street.
Oh, wow.
And it is so sad. It is so beautiful. And I'm really glad that Sesame Street didn't decide to kiddify it. It's just perfect. Trivia.
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 Trivia. The Broadway musical of Chicago ran for 936 performances. The original non-play of Chicago in 1926 ran for 5 months.
Wow. That's a lot.
Exactly. In the 2002 movie musical film of Chicago, Richard Gere took tap dancing lessons for 3 months. His tap dancing scene in the movie was shot in half a day. Renee Zellweger, Richard Gere and Catherine Zeta-Jones all did their own dancing and singing.
And so they bloody well should.
Yes, exactly, if they're going to be performers in musical theatre. Mm. Bring the goods.
That's right. Be or the triple film.
Be the triple threat or the quadruple threat.
What's a quadruple threat?
I'm going to leave that to the listeners.
I'd be someone like our special guest who directs as well as doing all the other
exactly.
things.
Exactly. A legend.
Mm.
A legend. Catherine Zeta-Jones was approached by producer Martin Reynolds for the role of Roxy Hart in the 2002 movie of Chicago. Zeta-Jones had only a vague idea about Chicago the musical, but she did know that the Velma Kelly character sang the song All That Jazz. Catherine only wanted to play Velma Kelly because she wanted to sing All That Jazz. Her renditions of Christmas carols amazed the producer and she got the role. So what's the moral of that story?
Don't sing a song from the show at the audition.
You can sing I'm a Little Teapot Short and Stout and still be a possibility to get the role.
You could.
Whatever rocks your boat. Yes. If you're confident in singing a song that you know for your audition, go for it.
Go for it.
Sell yourself. Kander and Ebb wrote a new song for the 2002 film adaptation of Chicago that plays over the credits called Move On, sung by Renee Zellweger and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh. I'll add that to the playlist. I'd forgotten about
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
That was probably so they could be nominated for Best Song at the Oscars.
Now, Jane, did you know this trivia bit?
I think.
In 2003, Chicago won the Best Picture Oscar Award.
Excellent.
The last film musical to win Best Picture Oscar was... Do you? Tell the listeners.
Oliver!
31 years prior.
Yes, because there weren't really that many good musicals in that 31 years.
So what you were saying was, between Oliver and Chicago, they were all crap.
No, that's not
true. They were crap.
No. Superstar. Brilliant film. Norman Jewison directed. Fiddler on the Roof. Brilliant film. Norman Jewison directed.
Exactly.
But, as with all things, as we'll see with the Tonys for this show, it depends who you're up against that year.
Yes. Because
maybe something incredibly amazing was also nominated at the same time as those films. But there was not much in the way of film musicals from 1965 to...
John Travolta was offered the part of Billy Flynn for the 2002 movie of Chicago, but turned it down because he couldn't see how the stage musical of Chicago could be turned into a film.
Well, that's fair enough. If he can't imagine how it's going to work, then he can't go with the director's...
vision.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, good call. Good call from Travolta.
Mm. In the Chicago film, at the beginning of the scene introducing Mama Morton to the new inmates, Roxy Hart had a brief conversation with a woman smoking a cigarette. That character was played by Broadway legend Cheetah Rivera.
Oh, really?
Who portrayed Velma Kelly in the original 1975 production of Chicago.
Nice touch, Mr. Marshall. I like it. Yes,
respect.
Mm.
Yes, we must include our legends and never forget. Roxy and Velma toss out 8 roses to the audience at the end of each Broadway performance. As of November the 13th, 2012, a total of 53,120 roses have been flung into the crowd.
And that's just the Broadway version.
This is the question I want to ask.
Yeah.
Were the roses dethorned before throwing them out into the audience?
I would say so, because they've also got to be handled by the actors.
Exactly.
So, yes, they would be thorned.
Ruthie Henshaw played both Velma and Roxy in the London production.
Not simultaneously, I hope.
Well, I'm imagining her as one of those half characters with the half painted face and the half costume.
Oh, so one side red.
One side is Velma and one side is Roxy.
I don't know. She could have done. They could have done it like they did that Frankenstein with Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller. Where
oh yes.
They one night one would be Dr. Frankenstein and one would be the monster, and they'd swap the next night.
Mm. But that's how I would envision Ruthie. That's how I would see Ruthie do the role.
I do believe she played Roxy the first time she was in it. She was Roxy because Ursula Limper was Velma. There's an interesting behind-the-scenes doco about that. And then I think a few years went by and then she came back to be Velma.
Our very special guest today is Trailblazer Nancy Hayes, member of the Order of Australia. Ms. Hayes won the coveted title role in the J.C. Williamson's production of Sweet Charity in 1967, making her one of the first Australian women to play lead roles in musicals. Until then, top billing went to B-grade American or British performers. Nancy proved that not only could Australians perform in musical principal parts, they can also draw the punters in and put bums on seats.
Hear, hear. You lazy bum, bum, bum.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present Miss Nancy Hayes.
Hello, what a lovely introduction. Well, it's a pleasure for me because I love to talk about musicals.
Oh, yes, we love musical theatre very much here in Gawler.
Yes, well, we do here in Gawler. We're about to start, the Gawler population is about to start a community theatre group after many decades of not having anything. We're discovering so many other like-minded people right now. So we are probably going to spend the weekend talking about musicals.
Well, it's a delightful subject. I mean, I started out in community theatre. My dance teacher started a company called the McKellar Musical Society. I grew up in Manly, and I was with her from when I was a tiny child learning dancing. But when she started this company, we were able to be up the back of rehearsals, doing our homework, and then hopping up on, you know, onto the floor and doing the military tap from the Desert Song or Totem Tom Tom from Rosemary, because she had been with J.C. Williamson's for many years and she knew all these shows.
Oh, brilliant. I got to, as a child, be part of my parents' experience in a very similar kind of community theatre where we had the former conductor of the Australian Ballet and his wife, who had been in the Chorus of Opera Australia, come and bring all of their knowledge, and we did things like Rosemary in the early 80s. It was great.
Yes.
Now, we've got some regular questions that we ask generally all our guests, and we're happy to not ask them if the conversation flows along as it did with Tony Sheldon last episode. We didn't get through most of the questions. We just had a wonderful chat.
Yes, Tony was an absolute hoot. I love Tony.
Oh, well, we all do. I mean, he's an encyclopedic mind as far as shows are concerned.
Oh, yes.
The history of theatre, it's extraordinary.
Oh, we could do 100 episodes with just Tony.
You could. And then some.
Yes.
I also just wanted to add, I saw you in the early 90s at the Adelaide Festival Centre in 42nd Street. And I think that might be the only time I've actually got to witness you on stage, but it's very emblazoned in my memory, that production.
Oh, that's good. It was a great show, and we did it for many years, of course.
Oh, yes.
I think I did 934 performances of 42nd Street.
I can see Jane's brain having that permanently etched in her brain.
I'm actually talking about one of Nancy's scenes, actually. Very vivid in my memory.
Do you remember what scene that was?
It's one in the, I think it's the second act.
But she only has one scene in the second act.
Oh, well, that'd be the scene.
Because, as you know, she breaks her leg at the end of the first act.
Mm, yes, well, hence the posh.
I'm sure 42nd Street will be in our musicals to cover on the podcast. So stay tuned, everyone.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about the plot, look it up. We'll wait for our next episode. We are here today to talk about Chicago. And what makes you, Nancy Hayes, suitably qualified to discuss Chicago, the musical vaudeville?
Well, it was one of my favourites. I had heard about Chicago in the mid-70s because I had been keeping my eye on Gwen Verdon's next Broadway show, after Sweet Charity, because I knew that it was something that I possibly could be suitable for. So it took 10 years before Chicago came along, and I got the LP as soon as I could, and I played it and played it and thought, oh, I've got to do this show. Well, it took 5 years before Sydney Theatre Company programmed it. Richard Werrett programmed it for his second or third season with great controversy because many people didn't believe that subsidised theatre should be doing a commercial American musical. Mm. But it was a huge success. We were only going to do 6 weeks at the Opera House and we ended up doing 81 and 82 into 83. Wow. And it made a lot of money for Sydney Theatre Company, and it was a very, very famous production, and people still talk about it.
That's really good longevity for a musical in Australia, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and particularly with a subsidised company, and it set them up financially very, very well.
Yes, because there is, even now, I think, a bit of, is it worthy for the state theatre companies? People say, you know, that you're better off doing something that's edgy.
Well, it's good writing, and to me it is edgy. Ooh, because yeah. It talks about media manipulation.
Yes.
And let's face it, that's happening more and more, particularly in television.
The relevance to now, it just keeps growing as we get more celebrity obsessed.
Don't forget to add in AI as well. That will only make it grow more.
Oh, yeah, because yes. They can manipulate people's images into... here's a photo of Nancy Hayes skydiving over the Sydney Harbour Bridge today when we know that you're actually in Perth. that could happen.
It could happen.
With all this AI nonsense. So here are some of our regular questions. When did you first come across this show? Well, you just said you kept your eyes open for Gwen Verdon's next
thing. Exactly.
Yeah. But I have to tell you that when I finally saw it in New York, which is 1976, I had the great pleasure of going backstage. I saw a matinee, and between the matinee and the evening show, I spent all that time talking to Gwen in her dressing room. She was absolutely so welcoming and said, I know you. She said, I know of you. And I remember that you did Sweet Charity the year after we opened on Broadway. And she said, it's such a thrill to meet you. Well, I couldn't believe it. I had the best time talking to her. And, of course, when I saw the show, that just made me want to be part of it more and more. So I had a very special connection, but it took, as I said, another 5 years before we did it in Australia. But the good thing was that Richard was able to do his own version, and he brought together a wonderful team. He brought together Ross Coleman for choreography, and Brian Thompson for the set,
yes.
And Roger Kirk, who won the Tonys for The King and I on Broadway for costuming. So we had a really extraordinary creative team, and it was Geraldine Turner and myself as Velma and Roxy, and Terence Donovan as Billy, a marvellous dancer who'd been in theatre for years called Jack Webster was Mary Sunshine, George Bartels was Amos, and Judy Connelly. Did you know Judy Connelly?
Great singer.
She was Mama Morton, and she did Good to Mama, like Mae West in this fabulous, in that wonderful Mae West strut, you know, across the stage. And it was a unique production. It really was.
Yes, I remember hearing Brian Thompson's interview on stages with Peter Ayers a few years ago now, and the way he spoke about the design elements, it was so impressive that I really could see it in my mind's eye, because there's not a great deal of photographs and videos from the show because it was 1981.
No, that's right. Only things that we've got to do on television.
Yeah, so we've seen the bits from Mike Walsh. And
right.
Let's do a little plug for www.nancyhayes.com.au. Remember, it's Nancy with an E, people.
Not that's Nancy right. with a Y.
No. I'm sure. Has somebody made you do Liza with a Z as Nancy with an E?
Well, I did a cabaret show called Nancy with an E.
Yes,
Mr. Sheldon created for me.
Yes, you can still get the CD.
Oh, well, I will see if it's on Spotify, and I'll add that to the playlist. We do a playlist because part of the copyright rules is that unless you buy a specific license to play extracts, which is... not within our budget. We do a whole show about musicals without any extracts from the musical. So I create a Spotify playlist so people can click on that and listen. So I might dig out Nancy with an E.
It's wonderful for musical theatre students and people who love musical theatre.
Yes, well, you know, the more the merrier.
If you have not played your dream role in the show, do you have another role that you would like to play?
Oh, well, I couldn't think of one that was that I would give up for Roxy.
It's Roxy or nothing.
It's Roxy or nothing.
Yeah. Ruthie
you
Henschel.
Haven't got me if I haven't got Roxy.
Oh, fine. That's fine. You can declare that. Ruthie Henschel actually played both on the West End, obviously different periods of her life. Not simultaneously, that would be. Who is your favourite character in the show? Not necessarily to play, but to...
I think Amos.
Yes, I do.
I think Amos has the most heartfelt honesty and you know, he just brings that human quality to the show.
Yes. What's your favourite interaction in the show?
I think probably my own best friend.
Yes.
When that finishes Act One.
What is your favourite song?
Well, it would be Roxy, because I've always loved that monologue. That monologue. I mean, the book for Roxy was written by Neil Simon, and, you know, that whole monologue is just a joy to play.
Ah.
It's funny. You get such a satisfaction from the audience when you play it.
Right.
There's a wonderful video on YouTube with Nancy performing Roxy. And was that part of the Mike Walsh show back in the day?
Well, yes, thank goodness for Mike, because he used to bring people from the shows and put them on. So some of that, as we said earlier, is the only video we have of things that we've done. It's with Mike Walsh, yes.
It's a wonderful performance, and with the chorus men that you have in that performance, it's just amazing.
Well, we had the girls playing the boys and the boys playing the girls throughout the show, our ensemble. So it was very, you know, it was very forward-thinking in that time.
Do you think the film musicalisation was a faithful or interesting version of Chicago?
I thought it was wonderful. I went to see it with great trepidation, and I absolutely love what Rob Marshall did with it.
Yes.
I think he really pulled it off.
Yeah, I was concerned that he was going to try and make it too real and lose the vaudeville aspect of it. But I think that he just did exactly what we were hoping for.
What was needed.
Mm.
Yes, I've seen it many times and I really do love it.
We have a question that we often ask. This is a very American show, and could it be transplanted into Australia, or does it need to be about America?
Well, I think it does need to be about America. A lot of times people say, why don't you do it with Australian accents? Well, the meter of the writing is very important with that American timing and accent.
Yes.
And I believe that is truly the way it needs to be done. We could do it as Australians, but I just don't think it would be quite as pithy.
I would think the closest thing you could do would make it Melbourne in the 20s with Squizzy Taylor and that kind
of... And all of those people, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you're right. Well, Melbourne doesn't have the same excitement in the title, does it? Melbourne exclamation mark.
And there would be nothing as exciting as going to Chicago in the 1920s to the Jazz Age and seeing all the glitz and glamour and being part of that sort of greed and corruption and just to have a little taste of it.
Yes, taste of that. Mm. But, you know, they'd had, Fossey and Verdon had their eye on this, on the movie with Ginger Rogers for many years and were wanting to make it into a musical, but they couldn't get the rights for a long time. Mm. And then when he finally did, and they were in rehearsal, of course, he had that massive heart attack. So they didn't open until the 75 season, I think it was, which was the same year that Chorus Line opened. I think if they had opened the year before, I think it would have won a Tony.
Oh, undoubtedly. I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn it didn't get a Tony. Again, it's just the luck of what year it came out, so Chorus Line got the Tony.
Well, which was a huge change in presentation of a musical.
Yes.
And was why I went to New York, not only to see Chicago, was to see A Chorus Line, because, again, I had been playing that recording over and over again. And as I started as a dancer in My Fair Lady in 1961. Mm. I'd been in the chorus, so I understood exactly what that show was about.
Indeed. Yeah, it was an astonishing year. The other two nominations were, again, great musicals. One was Pacific Overtures by Sondheim.
I saw that too.
And
yes.
I can't remember what the other one was, which is one that hasn't gone down in history, but a critical acclaim, but didn't really tap into the public imagination, whatever that one was.
Now, I don't know too much about Pacific Overtures, only the fact that I saw the album in an op shop, and I remember distinctly the album cover was very, very bright and very just sort of out there.
Oh, it's about Japan.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
Written for the
bicentennial. Oh, of course, yes, in 1976.
Captain Perry going to the first Western people to go to Japan was Captain Perry. Mm. And it's a magnificent musical. And I remember seeing it and had a kabuki runway through the theatre.
Yeah.
And the presentation was amazing. I was fortunate to meet Hal Prince, the producer and director, when they came here. Sondheim, Hal Prince and Alan J. Lerner in 1977 came to the Sydney Conservatorium for a music theatre forum.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Absolutely overwhelmed and were sitting there, couldn't believe that they were in front of us talking about everything. And so I was able to be in touch with Hal and go backstage after Pacific Overtures to meet certain cast members. So I'd had a magnificent trip that year between Gwen Verdon and everything else. It was just chorus line and all of those things. It was terrific.
You were dancing on cloud nine.
I was dancing on cloud nine, but the extraordinary thing that came out of it was a man called Paul Rubin was J.C. Williamson's representative in New York, and he asked me for lunch, and he was the one that helped me get all these tickets and things, and he was asking me, you know, what I wanted to see and everything. He said, now, have you seen him same time next year, the play same time next year? And I said, no, but it's on my list because it sounds wonderful. He said, oh, I think you should see it. So I didn't think any more about it. But when I got back to Australia, my agent rang and said, J.C. Williamson's have offered you same time next year. So it was my first big national. I'd had done other straight theatre, but not on a commercial scale. And it was a beautiful play to do. And I did that for a couple of years.
Channel 9 had the rights to the film for most of my childhood. Every year we would stop one Sunday night and watch same time next year.
Yes, it
really is such a beautiful piece of writing because it's just
anyway,
the two
we're
of them.
Getting off the track with it.
That's all right.
You're listening to another opening, another show, the Musical Theatre Podcast, and you're listening to our interview with Nancy Hayes.
Was that your subtle way of saying, Jane, stop getting off the track?
Exactly. You have fond memories of Chicago because that's where you met your husband.
That's right, yes. He came to play, and of course the band were on stage, and he was at the time with the jazz faculty at the conservatorium with Don Burrows. Oh. And he didn't even know, he knew nothing about musicals. And he thought, I don't know what it is, but I only have to go down the hill to the opera house and I'll take the gig. Well, he fell in love with musicals and I fell in love with him and he fell in love with me. Oh. So it is a very, very special show for me in that way.
It's a wonderful romantic story.
Now, the next part is to nominate your dream cast for Chicago. Now, this can be people living or dead or aged out of the role or not yet old enough to play the role, but whatever, flights of fancy abound.
Now, in our last podcast with Tony, when we did Priscilla, I used a lot of Doctor Who references.
Yes.
So I can guarantee you there are no Doctor Who references in our dream cast.
Well done.
Well, mine's a bit out of left field because I'm going to give you an all-male cast.
Oh, okay.
So often with so many women in those leading roles, and so I thought I'd just have a think about a really fun idea to do a very different Chicago. All
now, right. Let's get our producer hats on. So I've got my hat on.
Okay.
Have you got your hat on, Jane?
Yeah, I'm only going to be but two bobs worth every now and again.
Yep.
So Michael will read out the name of the character and then Nancy will say her pick and then Michael will say his pick.
Roxy Hart.
Courtney Act.
Oh, yes,
oh,
yes,
yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes.
Beautiful dancer, beautiful performer.
Yes. Oh, totally right.
Yes, exactly right. We've got three actresses in that role. We've got Amy Adams.
Yes.
Sally Field back in the day.
Oh, yes.
And back in the day, Goldie Hawn.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. And they were, and Goldie Hawn was supposed to do the film with Liza Minnelli.
Yes, yeah. It just took so long for them to do all the negotiating that they were no longer appropriate for the roles anymore.
But seeing Goldie on the videos when she was in Laughing, seeing her move around and perform and kick the legs and what have you, that's what inspired me
and
to
also,
cast her.
Goldie did, I think it was All That Jazz with Liza at a concert, which is on video.
Yes, I've seen that.
See.
And it was, yes, she could see them doing it wonderfully, yes.
Velma Kelly.
Hans the German.
Oh, he'd be up for that.
Yes, exactly.
The two of them would be very good together.
Would he use the accordion in the part?
There'd have to be some incorporation of this.
Well, there'd have to be a moment, class or something.
Well, you see, I don't know if you know this, listener, but Velma is already established a bit of a career in the vaudeville. So being an accordion player is not outside the realms of reality.
Totally, that's right, yes.
We've got three actresses in the role of Velma. We've got the singer Ray. I don't know if you've heard of the singer Ray.
I don't think
I have. She has a hit song at the moment called Where the Hell Is My Husband?
Whoa, baby, where the hell is my husband?
Copyright, darling.
Copyright, can't go any further.
Then, that's a shame.
Then back in the day.
Judy Garland.
And then back in the day, my pick is Miss Nancy Hayes.
For Velma?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, that'd be a stretch. But I'll do it.
Billy Flynn.
Mitchell Boutelle.
Oh. Yes.
Yes, we love Mitchell.
Mm.
We have Martin Short and Matthew Morrison from Glee.
Well, he's not just from Glee.
Yes.
He's been on Broadway many times.
He's been on Broadway. He's a Broadway performer, but I know him from Glee.
Yes. And Martin Short is a bit left field because I think a lot of people would go for Amos for him.
Yes, they would. They would.
But he does actually have quite a showman character as well.
Oh, well, he does, yes.
Well, he's a proper actor. He can actually do different things.
Yes. What was the Broadway show he did? Was it?
Oh.
He did a Broadway show.
He did a Neil Simon thing with Bernadette Peters and it didn't go very well.
The Goodbye Girl?
That's it. Yeah.
Mary Sunshine.
Reuben Kay.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. I can see Reuben doing that really, really well.
Mm. I'm having an all-Australian cast because that's dear to my heart.
Good on you. Mary Sunshine.
Trevor Ashley.
Yes.
More needs to be said.
Yep.
He's just been nominated for an Olivia Award, which he's very excited about. I think he actually didn't finally get the award, but we're so proud of
him. Was that for the producers?
That's for the producers in London, yes. Mm.
We've got two actors, Paul Capsis.
Yes.
And Laverne Cox.
Funnily enough, I thought about Paul myself.
Oh, that was almost a snap moment.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, I'll just let the listener know who doesn't yet know about Chicago that the role of Mary Sunshine has been played, to my knowledge, every time on stage by a male actor and possibly a trans actor. I don't know of every single performance they've ever done. In the movie, they chose Christine Baranski. I'm not really sure why they decided to do that.
No, but I do like her.
Yes,
yes, I do like her, but I think it was a shame to not stick to that, what had been always the fact, yes.
And we were discussing Laverne Cox actually for a different character and then found some clips online of her singing and she's actually an operatic singer.
Oh, she's actually wonderful.
Yeah,
she's got a
why
wonderful
we moved
voice.
It to Mary Sunshine because Mary Sunshine's big number is very operatory and thought, that's where she would be most suitable.
What's that aria where it goes,
That's the Queen of the Night.
Yes, that's the one she sings.
No.
Isn't it?
No, she was singing Nessun Dorma, which was written for a man, but in her key.
What was that?
Operatory.
Yeah, I like that word. Operatory.
Now, our next one, when you're good to mama, we've got to be good to mama or mama won't be good to us. So, matron Mama Morton.
Reuben K.
Oh.
Yes.
I'm really, really digging this all-men cast of yours.
I'd actually love to see it.
Yeah.
To direct it.
Yeah, okay, everybody, call to arms. Get on the phone and harass these people.
No. Harass Nancy Hayes.
If they'd all come together to do it.
Yes.
Well, we've got two actresses in the role of Matron Mama Morton. Geraldine Turner.
Yes.
And Rhonda Birchmore.
Yes, who I'm working with at the moment.
Of course.
I shall tell her if she was cast.
She was cast in our dream cast of Chicago.
Yes.
Because people generally see a dominating physicality with Mama, but they don't think about long and thin. That's still a very dominating physicality in those confrontational scenes if you've got little dancery people as Roxy and Velma.
That's right, the best.
And Rhonda's got legs up to goodness knows where.
Yes. I know, I stand beside her every day.
Don't forget to stick around while our special guest...
My dear friend Todd McKenney for Amos.
Yes, yes indeed.
Because Todd has a wonderful vulnerability. And we saw it a bit in Hairspray when he played the father in Hairspray.
Yeah.
But he's one of the kindest and funniest people I have worked with. And I've done quite a bit with him from 42nd Street right through to six dance lessons in 6 weeks and all sorts of other things. And I think he would be a lovely Amos.
Yes. Why hasn't that been thought about before?
What about a Reg Livermore?
Well, Reg, indeed. Again, another great friend. He would be a beautiful Amos.
Yes. Yes.
So there you go. That's our choice. Well, I'm going to say our choice because it's our podcast. And I just thought of it on the spur of the moment. So I've come through in a pressure situation with an absolute legend of Australian theatre.
Yes, I said, though, Michael, he'd want to be Roxy.
Well, yes, quite. He can, doesn't matter, he can have whatever role he wants.
If we can get him, he can name his role.
Oh, we love our Reg.
Yes.
Yes, opening today, opening tonight. Yeah. Just about to send off a chookers to him.
Oh, jolly good.
Yes. I do want to make a special mention to the dream cast. There's a cabaret performer that's come to Adelaide numerous times called Mark Nadler. Have you heard of Mark Nadler, Nancy?
No, I haven't.
Mark Nadler does the most wonderful performances, and he does a Broadway hootenanny late at night. Piano, tap dancer, he can do it all.
And he does. He does Mr. Bojangles, accompanies himself, sings it, and then does the tap dance in the middle.
So I'm going to cast him as doing all the parts in the Cell Block Tango. He does that in the Broadway hootenanny, and it's just wonderful to listen to.
Flipping between each of the girls with their own idiosyncratic accents and manners. It's really very clever.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
I'll see if I can find a video to privately send you, but I'll also put it on the Spotify playlist for our listeners to discover because it's such good fun. Nancy, what have you discovered behind the next door?
West Side Story.
Oh, fantastic.
Another great one.
It's a wonderful musical.
Oh, my goodness, isn't it?
Thank you so much for joining us, Nancy. We really, really love having you with us.
Well, it was a pleasure, and it was lovely to get to know you, and I hope it will continue.
Thank you for listening to...
Another Opening, Another Show.
The Musical Theatre Podcast.
Don't forget to check out all our socials and listen to us on Spotify, Castbox, and our YouTube page that we've just established.
We look forward to having responses from you. You can comment on any of those platforms or go on socials and email us at aoas2025@hotmail.com.
We would love to hear from you. We want to send the love and share the love of musical theatre with you all.
Thank you for listening and have a lovely month.
Till next month. Hooroo!